So I want you to imagine renting this brilliant personal assistant. Like, this person is absolutely incredible. They help you write complex code. They patiently summarize all your, scattered journal notes. They organize your life, and they're just magically available 24/7.
Sounds like a pretty great deal.
Right. But there's a massive catch. This assistant secretly photocopies every single note you hand them.
Yeah. There is.
And even when you look them dead in the eye and say explicitly, hey, I need you to shred that document, they just don't. They nod politely, they take the paper, and they silently lock it away in this massive subterranean filing cabinet that's owned by their corporate bosses.
Which is terrifying when you put it like that.
Exactly. I mean, would you keep paying their salary?
Honestly, most people would probably change the locks on their office door the second they found out. But yet, when it comes to cloud-based artificial intelligence, millions of us are essentially leaving the front door wide open and just handing over the keys.
And that dynamic, that is the absolute core of our mission for today's deep dive. We are digging into this truly fascinating manifesto, a technical build blog, really, from June 2026.
Right, by Vlad Silacoup.
Yes, published over on localghost.ai. And it carries this incredibly fitting title, The Expensive Part Was Never the AI.
It's such a great read.
It really is. So our goal today is to pull back the curtain on the hard truths of cloud-based AI. We're going to look at the hidden and honestly pretty alarming costs tied to their data retention policies.
And we're not just going to complain about the problem either.
Exactly. No. We are going to break down a practical step-by-step blueprint. We're going to show you how, even if you consider yourself a total beginner, how you can set up a powerful local AI on your own home hardware and just permanently take your privacy back.
Because it really requires a fundamental shift in how we view the technology. I mean, for years, we've been conditioned to view these frontier AI models as this untouchable magic that can only exist inside billion-dollar climate-controlled data centers.
Right, like you need a supercomputer.
Yeah. Exactly. But what Vlad's documentation proves, unequivocally, is that the magic has escaped the lab. Bringing that capability into your own home isn't just a fun weekend project anymore. It is rapidly becoming the only logical defense mechanism to protect your personal data and your wallet.
Let's tackle that privacy issue first, actually, because the evidence Vlad brings up in this piece genuinely stopped me in my tracks.
It's sobering, for sure.
I think a lot of us have just fallen into this comfortable trap. We treat cloud AI inputs like a private search engine window. You know, you ask it a weird, hyper-specific question, or you have it analyze a sensitive personal email.
Or feed a proprietary code from your startup.
Yes. And then you just hit the delete button and assume the digital paper trail is gone forever. But Vlad points to this terrifying wake-up call that happened back in 2025.
Yeah, and it completely shatters the entire illusion of user control. He highlights the 2025 INRI OpenAI copyright lawsuit. Hmm. This unfolded in the Southern District of New York. And in that case, the plaintiffs, who were suing over copyright infringement, they managed to secure a legal preservation order.
Okay.
And the mechanics of that order forced the company to retain and ultimately hand over the logs of roughly 20 million user conversations.
Oh, wow. 20 million. Just massive collateral damage.
Yeah.
These weren't just the active conversations, right? The ones sitting neatly in people's sidebars.
Far from it. That's the crazy part. The preservation order swept up millions of conversations that users had explicitly and intentionally deleted.
That is just bonkers to me.
And it didn't discriminate by subscription tier either. It applied to the free users, sure, but it also swept up the data of paying plus and pro tier customers.
People who thought they were paying for a premium secure environment.
Exactly. The system had quietly retained those logs in the background, completely ignoring the fact that users had pressed the delete button. It overrode data privacy laws that would ordinarily mandate their erasure.
And the most chilling detail to me reading through this is that the users themselves were completely powerless in the scenario. I mean, they weren't the ones being sued.
Right. They weren't parties to the copyright case at all.
Right. And when some privacy advocates actually attempted to intervene in the court case, you know, to shield that personal data, the court just denied their attempts. So your personal data, your late night queries, your raw thoughts, they're just bundled up and handed over as leverage in a corporate legal battle.
And Vlad distills this entire situation into a single realization. On a server you don't own, a delete button is nothing more than a cosmetic request. It just hides the data from your own computer screen.
Yeah, that's wild.
The underlying logs still exist on the host's physical hard drives. And once those logs exist, turning them against you, selling them to data brokers, or handing them over to a court. That just becomes a simple policy decision.
A terms of service update?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Written by a management team you have never met. Conversely, on a box you physically own, sitting right in your living room, there is no third party acting as a middleman. There is no corporate filing cabinet to subpoena.
He has this quote in his article, "Deleted means deleted only when the delete button is yours."
It's a great line.
That quote is literally going on a sticky note on my monitor. I love it. So we are surrendering our most private data, but it's not even like you're getting this magical service for free in exchange.
Oh, definitely not.
We are paying a steep premium, and according to Vlad's breakdown, it's turning into a massive economic trap for the consumer.
Yeah, understanding that trap requires a quick look at the underlying economics of frontier AI inference. What the consumer market is experiencing right now is this phenomenon analysts call a false floor.
Okay, a false floor.
Yeah. Back in January 2025, Sam Altman made a rather stunning admission. He revealed that OpenAI was actually losing money even on their $200 a month pro subscriptions.
I remember reading that and doing a double take. Even at $200 a month per user, they're bleeding cash.
They are. The usage patterns were simply too heavy, and the compute costs were just immense. So they are essentially subsidizing the true cost of the intelligence.
Interesting.
The major AI labs are deliberately pricing their consumer services well below what it physically costs them to run the server farms, entirely as a strategy to capture and monopolize market share.
Right, the classic Silicon Valley playbook.
Exactly. The sector is hemorrhaging money at a scale that only venture capital funds and Matson tech conglomerates can float. But venture capital patience is not infinite.
Right, which means that false floor is inevitably going to collapse. And we're already seeing the warning signs, aren't we? Vlad's article methodically documents how these providers are quietly tightening the vise on what your flat monthly fee actually buys.
They have no other choice but to squeeze the user. I mean, they're actively shutting down API automation tools that route heavy workloads through standard user accounts. They are systematically replacing those generous, you know, fuzzy usage limits from 2023 with harsh, explicit hard caps.
I've noticed that.
Right. By 2025, Anthropic began stacking restrictive weekly rate limits on top of their already tight five-hour rolling limits.
Yeah.
And Google followed suit by publishing explicit, unyielding daily prompt counts per subscription tier. If you cross that invisible line while trying to get your work done, you are instantly throttled. You get dropped down to a vastly weaker, smaller model.
It is the ultimate boiling frog scenario. The monthly price advertised on the website stays exactly the same, but the actual horsepower you receive gets squeezed tighter and tighter every single quarter.
You're quite literally paying more for less.
All while permanently surrendering your data to their servers. So if the cloud is essentially a landlord who, I don't know, reads your diary and keeps jacking up the rent, the natural instinct is to just run away.
Right. But until recently, running away meant giving up the AI entirely. And this is where Vlad's personal journey shifts from theory to a highly practical solution.
I love this part because it's such a relatable catalyst. We jump to late May 2026. Vlad is working late in London on his local ghost project, and he's actively trying to run a local AI model.
Specifically, the Gemma 4E4B model.
Right, so he can securely categorize his personal journal entries without sending them to the cloud. But he is trying to run this massive model strictly on his server's central processor, the CPU, using llama.cpp.
And we should definitely set the stage with his hardware here, because Vlad is not trying to do this on some dusty five-year-old laptop.
No, he has a beast of a machine.
He operates a very serious home server setup. It's a specialized Ugreen network-attached storage device, a NAS. He has a 12th-generation Intel i5 processor in there, an expansive 64 gigabytes of memory, and a staggering 70 terabytes of storage space.
70 terabytes.
Yeah. And this machine is already doing heavy lifting. He is independently hosting 22 live websites, keeping full archives of various cryptocurrency blockchains running, and managing his personal file backups. It is a highly capable machine acting as his personal digital fortress.
But when he asks that capable CPU to run AI inference, it absolutely crawls. It is so painfully slow that Vlad is literally procrastinating. He's booting up the video games Dredge and Slay the Spire 2 just to kill time while he waits for a single paragraph of text to generate.
We've all been there.
Right. Eventually, his partner, Christina, walks into the room, watches him playing games while the server churns, and delivers the ultimate reality check. She essentially tells him to stop multitasking, focus on one thing, and suggests that if he unplugs his external gaming graphics card and hooks it up to the server, the whole project will probably go a lot faster.
Sometimes the most complex architectural problems just need an outside perspective. So Vladek takes his gaming graphics card, which is an MSI RTX 4070 he originally bought back in 2023 for gaming, and it's sitting inside a separate external enclosure, a Razer Core X Chroma. And he physically connects it to the server.
Now, here is where my brain immediately threw a massive red flag when I was reading his build log. Because for anyone out there who might want to replicate this, Vlad is connecting this incredibly powerful external graphics card to his server using a Thunderbolt cable.
Right.
And that specific cable has a hard speed limit of 40 gigabits per second. If you are trying to pipe a massive multi-gigabyte artificial intelligence model through an external cable, doesn't that inherently bottleneck the entire system? To me, it sounds like trying to drink a really thick milkshake through one of those tiny plastic coffee stirrers.
I love that analogy. The milkshake analogy makes perfect intuitive sense based on how we usually think about computer peripherals.
Yeah.
But the architecture of AI inference operates under a completely different set of physics, and it surprises almost everyone.
Okay, walk me through it.
When it comes to actually running the model and generating text, that external cable link barely matters at all.
Wait, how does that work? If the brain is outside the computer, how is the cable not the bottleneck?
So think of the AI model, like the massive heavy metal plates of an industrial printing press. Those metal plates are the model's weights, the actual data that makes up its intelligence.
Okay.
The Thunderbolt cable is the single narrow road leading from the warehouse to the printing factory. Yes, when you first launch the program, you have to load those heavy metal plates onto a truck and drive them down that narrow road. That initial loading phase might take a few seconds because of the cable's speed limit.
Okay, so the initial setup has to travel through the coffee stirrer.
Correct. But once those heavy plates arrive and are physically locked into the printing press, which in this case is the graphics card's own internal video RAM or VRAM.
Right.
The cable's job is done. The actual printing of the pages, the token generation where the AI is thinking and spitting out words, happens entirely inside the graphics card at blinding speeds. It streams those weights directly from its own internal memory. It never needs to touch the narrow Thunderbolt road ever again.
Oh, wow. That completely flips my understanding of it. So the text generation doesn't travel back and forth over the cable. The card just handles it internally and sends the finished text back.
Exactly. Provided the entire AI model can physically fit inside the graphics card's memory, an external GPU sitting on a desk will run inference at very nearly the exact same speed it would if it were bolted directly onto the computer's motherboard.
That is a massive revelation for anyone who has a laptop and an old external GPU just, you know, gathering dust in a closet. But before Vlad could actually test that newfound speed, he had to get the software to recognize the new hardware. And the lengths he goes to are borderline theatrical.
Oh, absolutely.
He flat out refuses to take his 22 live websites offline just to install the necessary software updates and Linux kernel headers.
Yeah, his guiding philosophy is that relying on a maintenance window to take your services offline is a crutch for bad system architecture.
Mm.
So instead of bringing his server down and frustrating his website visitors, he executes this brilliantly elegant maneuver. He temporarily reroutes the entire flow of his internet traffic.
I love how he does this. It's like a traffic cop redirecting cars during a parade. He takes the specific entry points that handle web traffic, so ports 80 and 443, and goes into his home internet router.
Yeah.
He tells the router, hey, for the next hour, do not send the mail to the main server. Forward all of it to a temporary address on my laptop. He literally spins up tiny web servers on his laptop, moves his security certificates over, and handles all the live internet traffic right there on his desk.
It's so clever.
Right. So the main Debian server goes totally quiet. He performs a massive operating system upgrade, compiles all the new NVIDIA drivers, authorizes the external graphics card, and then just tells the router to point the traffic back to the main server.
And the internet never noticed a thing.
Zero downtime.
It is a phenomenal flex of system administration skills.
Huh.
But the real payoff, the moment of truth, is what happens when he finally reconfigures his AI engine to actually utilize that newly connected graphics card. The before and after benchmark numbers are staggering.
Let's look at the actual math here. He ran a stress test using the Gemma 412 billion parameter model. When he forced his powerful CPU to do the work, it managed to generate 3.44 tokens per second.
Which is agonizing.
Yeah, Vlad describes that speed as slower than physically handwriting the words. You absolutely cannot have a fluid back-and-forth chat at that speed. But then he flips the switch to the external graphics card.
The jump is exponential. Offloading the exact same task to the RTX 4070 GPU causes the generation speed to rocket up to over 53 tokens per second.
Wow.
That is significantly faster than the average human can read. It instantly crosses the psychological threshold from being a technically functioning novelty to being a snappy, highly interactive assistant.
And to understand why that miraculous jump happens, we have to look closely at the true hardware bottleneck of artificial intelligence.
Right, because it isn't just about the graphics card having more processing cores to do the math. And this is perhaps the single most critical concept for anyone planning to build an AI machine to grasp. Large language model token generation is almost entirely bound by memory bandwidth, not raw computational power.
Okay.
It is not about how fast your processor can do the complex math. It is entirely about how fast you can shovel the data out of memory and into the processor so it can do the math.
I like to think of the CPU as a genius professor locked in an office. They can solve any equation instantly, but you are forcing them to work by slipping one single page of a book at a time under the door. Yeah. It doesn't matter how smart they are. They spend 99% of their time just waiting for the next page.
That is a fantastic way to visualize it. A standard desktop CPU has a memory bandwidth of roughly 50 to 80 gigabytes per second. That is the gap under the door. The RTX 4070 graphics card, on the other hand, boasts over 500 gigabytes per second of memory bandwidth. It is the equivalent of removing the wall of the office completely and using a forklift to drop entire pallets of books directly onto the professor's desk every single second.
I want that forklift.
Exactly. The larger and more complex the AI model becomes, the more punishing that narrow CPU door becomes. That massive forklift-level bandwidth is the sole reason AI transforms from a slow crawl into a real-time conversational partner.
And the real-world impact of unlocking that speed is profound for his daily life. I mean, Vlad has this incredibly complex daily routine where he encodes a personal memory log.
Yeah.
We are talking about feeding the AI hours of recorded audio, dozens of photographs, geographic location pins pulled from maps, hundreds of personal emails, and like 1,000 instant messages. He uses the AI to categorize, tag, and store the entire context of his day. And when he relied on the CPU, processing a single day's log took over 24 hours.
Which presents a mathematical impossibility. If processing one day takes more than one day, the system inherently falls behind and can never catch up to real life.
But with the graphics card handling the workload, that exact same mountain of data takes just 2 hours to process.
Unbelievable.
Right. He can run the entire job automatically while he sleeps. Upgrading the hardware was the literal difference between a frustrating, broken experiment and a highly functional, automated system that quietly manages his life.
Which naturally brings us to the practical application for you, the listener.
Yes, because I know someone is listening to this right now thinking, okay, that is a cool story for Vlad, but I am not a system administrator. I do not have a massive server with 70 terabytes of storage sitting in my closet. How do I actually do this without spending $5,000 or $6,000 on enterprise hardware?
Vlad anticipates that exact question perfectly.
Right.
In his build log, he strips away all the extravagant home lab extras. He removes the massive hard drives meant for cryptocurrency nodes. He ditches the expensive enterprise server casing. And he meticulously lays out a blueprint for a beginner-friendly, production-ready desktop computer designed specifically for running local AI. And the total cost for the entire machine comes in at just about £1,130.
A completely standalone AI machine for a little over £1,000. What exactly goes into a build like that?
He starts with a very reliable, budget-friendly foundation. So a Ryzen 5 5600 processor paired with a standard B550M motherboard. That combination gives you plenty of processing cores for about £175.
Okay, affordable.
He adds 32 gigabytes of standard system RAM for another £50. You pick up a basic mid-tower computer case for $60, and crucially, you invest in a robust 850-watt power supply for £90.
The power supply is pretty beefy.
It is, but it's vital to ensure the graphics card receives clean, uninterrupted power during heavy workloads. But the magic of the build relies entirely on two specific components that are absolutely non-negotiable.
The first one being the storage drive. He specifically insists on a 1 terabyte NVMe solid-state drive, not a traditional hard drive.
Right. If you attempt to load a multi-gigabyte AI model from a traditional spinning hard drive, your system will effectively stall before it even begins thinking. Returning to our earlier analogy, using a spinning drive is like trying to fetch those heavy metal printing plates from the warehouse using a horse-drawn carriage.
Yeah, not gonna work.
The read speeds are drastically too slow. Pushing those massive data weights into the graphics card's memory requires the lightning-fast speeds of flash storage.
And then we get to the star of the show, the engine itself.
For this 2026 build, Vlad strongly recommends dropping in an RTX 5070 graphics card equipped with 12 gigabytes of VRAM.
Now, wait a second. His entire experiment and all those impressive benchmarks we just talked about, they were done on his old 4070 card. Why does the beginner blueprint jump up to the 5070?
It all comes back to that memory bandwidth bottleneck. The newer 5070 model costs roughly the exact same amount at retail as the older 4070 did, so about £499.
Oh, nice.
Right. But instead of that 500 gigabytes per second of bandwidth, the newer architecture delivers 672 gigabytes per second. It is a significantly larger forklift for the exact same price.
Wow, okay.
Because token generation speed is so deeply tied to memory bandwidth, the 5070 will generate text noticeably faster than the 53 tokens per second he achieved on the older hardware.
So for £1,130, you get a dedicated machine where the graphics card plugs directly into the motherboard. You don't have to mess with Thunderbolt enclosures or external bottlenecks. You press the power button and it just works.
Exactly.
But I think we need to pause and be completely honest about the trade-offs here. Firing up a local 12 billion parameter Gemma model in your living room is undeniably cool and it feels like the future. But it is not GPT-5. It is not the latest Claude Fable model. Those massive trillion parameter frontier models running in the cloud are genuinely measurably smarter.
They absolutely are, and Vlad's documentation doesn't attempt to claim otherwise. If you are trying to execute the hardest, most complex reasoning tasks imaginable, let's say an open-ended autonomous workflow where you command the AI to scan this entire undocumented software code base, understand its architecture, and find a hidden logic bug that I can't see.
Yeah, good luck with that locally.
Right, those massive cloud models will pull ahead effortlessly, and the local model will likely fail.
So if your goal is to rent a supercomputer to do open-ended PhD-level reasoning, you still have to pay the toll and go to the cloud.
But the critical realization that Vlad arrives at is how exceptionally rare it is that we actually require that absolute ceiling of supercomputer intelligence. He estimates that for 9 out of 10 tasks he asks an AI to do on a daily basis, raw intelligence is simply not the bottleneck.
We are talking about the mundane friction of daily work. You know, drafting a polite email, summarizing a dense PDF document, querying your own scattered journal notes, or writing a straightforward Python script based on a plan you have already meticulously scoped out yourself.
Exactly. For the vast majority of our daily friction, a near-frontier local model is incredibly capable. Those giant, expensive cloud models are strictly necessary only for the extreme edge cases. For everything else, the local model is significantly faster, infinitely more private, and ultimately far cheaper.
Which perfectly distills the core takeaway of this entire deep dive. We are watching two distinct economic curves cross in real time. On one side, cloud AI is getting vastly more expensive. They're imposing tighter limits on your workflow, they are continually scanning your inputs, and as that lawsuit proved, they are permanently retaining your data even when you explicitly tell them to delete it.
Yeah.
When you use the cloud, the model is rented, and the rent is collected twice. Once from your bank account and once from your privacy.
Well said. And on the other side, the local hardware curve is moving rapidly in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
You pay a single, one-time fixed cost of around £1,130.
Right.
If you are a heavy AI user spending hundreds of dollars a month on various cloud API subscriptions, that hardware completely pays for itself in less than half a year.
Wow, yeah.
The open source models available to download keep getting smarter every single month. You only update them when you want to. And crucially, your data never leaves the metal box under your desk. No invisible third party holds your logs. No court can subpoena your private, unedited thoughts.
So if we play this scenario forward, it introduces a genuinely fascinating possibility. I mean, we know that these local models are getting smarter and the hardware required to run them is getting cheaper. But what happens when shared memory architectures become mainstream?
Oh, that's the big question.
Right. What happens when everyday computers can share massive cools of RAM between the CPU and AI without even needing those expensive specialized graphics cards? Will this current cloud AI era eventually be viewed as just a brief, bizarre period where we willingly handed over the raw, unedited contents of our minds simply because we didn't yet realize we had the power to process them at home. Something to think about.
It completely flips the balance of power. The capability to own your intelligence is already here. The only thing left is to decide who you trust to hold the keys.
Exactly. Think back to that personal assistant we talked about at the very beginning. The one quietly photocopying every single note you hand them and locking it away in a corporate vault. Now that you know exactly how to build your own assistant, one that is just as fast, immensely helpful, and actually owns a real shredder, how much longer are you going to keep paying the rent?